This is 89.9 WWNO. Yes, we're headed for another art-filled week. Are you making plans, or do you need some ideas? Well, you've come to the right place. Whether you're in the mood for a festive celebration of the guitar, a magical journey through a sculpture garden, or an engaging tour of our wetlands through the power of art, it's all in the mixed media. Come along as we go inside the arts. Hi, I'm your host, Diane Mack. The third annual New Orleans International Guitar Festival gets underway tonight at Tulane University. The week-long festival, presented by the Cervantes Hispanic American Arts Foundation, will feature artists from 10 countries celebrating a variety of musical styles and influences, highlighting the guitar. Tulane guitar professor Javier Olando and festival organizer Brenda Malara are here. Welcome to the program.
Thank you for having us.
You must be very proud as the festival is gaining traction in the community. How did it get its start?
This festival was conceived as part of the events that we organize through the Cervantes Foundation. It's a nonprofit that organizes yearly events like the Que Pasa Fest, a charity event, the Mardi Gras Mambo. And then we thought of including, as I'm a guitarist, including a New Orleans International Guitar Festival that will showcase the instrument and celebrate our diversity.
We decided to start off really, really small, bringing in some artists from different countries. Now we're on a third annual festival with 5 days of different events, and we're very excited.
So what are you exploring with these international artists in the festival?
We have not only the classical guitar showcased in this yearly guitar festival, we have the jazz, we have the flamenco, we had rock in the past. We also have different instruments, not only the guitar, but instruments that have the roots in the guitar from the guitar family, like the banjo, the Cuban tres, the Venezuelan cuatro. So I think it's a complete celebration of the instrument.
Who are the artists and which countries do they represent?
Well, we have a lot of very good local artists that really tour the world, like Don Vappi, Steve Masakowski, our very own. And then we also have from Dominican Republic, Israel Cedeño. We have Rafael Padron from Cuba. We have Eduardo Martin from Cuba as well. Julian Caesar from Guatemala. Manuel Arteaga from Venezuela. Giovanni Santos from Brazil. Pepe Coloma from Peru. All different styles. We have also from the U.S., Jay Kaczerski and John Dobry. I'm very excited that we can bring so many countries that are going to be represented. John Lawrence is going to be the flamenco guitarist. He's a local flamenco guitarist that studied in Spain. And it's very important also to highlight that we not only have a Latino artist, we also have a Russian female guitarist that's going to be performing on Wednesday, tomorrow. Her name is Marina Alexandra, is one of the most prominent female classical guitarists in the world.
Wow, you are really showing off the guitar's versatility. What makes the instrument so accessible?
I think that the guitar just has so many possibilities, like no other instrument, that makes it very unique.
It's an instrument that you can find anywhere around the world.
Javier, how were you first attracted to the guitar?
In my house, we were all musically inclined, and I just got the guitar as a gift. So I started there, and I fell in love with it.
And what did you listen to growing up?
I did formal classical music studies back in Cuba, so I listened to a lot of classical music, not only classical guitar, but also in general classical music, and that I think had helped me to understand music better. And then as I grew older, well, I had influences, and just coming to this city, it's impossible for you not to be moved by different other genres, you know, like jazz and blues. So I think that I kind of incorporated that too. I also have a Cuban band, as you know, and we play Cuban traditional music.
Now, your band is called Ache Son?
Yes.
What does that mean?
Ache Son is a combination of two words, ache, which is to desire good deeds. It's an African word. And son is because of the Cuban genre son that later developed into what we know as salsa.
So how will the guitar festival unfold on Tulane University's campus?
Well, we start tonight at 6 p.m. We're going to have a panel, a discussion about music education and the challenges for the young guitarists to approach the instrument and their careers. We're going to have our very own legend of the guitar, Elias Barreiro, now a retired professor from Tulane University that worked there for more than 40 years teaching and educating young generations of guitarists. Also, we'll have Steve Masakowski, Dr. Carrie Alt, and Lisa Hooper representing the library. We'll talk about the resources that are available. Then we just cross to the next building, which is Dixon. At the Dixon Recital Hall, we're going to have a fabulous concert with Rafael Padron and Jay Kaczerski, and that will close the evening. So the concert will have a duration maybe of an hour and a half.
So in addition to concerts, there's also an educational component to the event.
We have a young artist competition that will start the next day on Wednesday. This will take place on Wednesday and Thursday, the first round. It's an opportunity for all those young guitarists. And this year we have an amazing interest of young guitarists coming from all around the United States to compete. So they get their exposure. They get their way to perform and show their artistry in this kind of environment. And I think that also the festival itself, since it's accessible, it's free, it's bringing guitars from around the world, it is educational by itself for these young artists that are going to come to the concerts, I'm sure, with very much with a lot of interest.
Mm-hmm. Now, there are other concerts on Tulane's campus?
Yes, we have on Wednesday the Russian guitarist Marina Alexandra, one of the most prominent female classical guitarists. Thursday we have Eduardo Martin coming directly from Cuba. He's a composer and a performer. He will do a program with his works, and he will explain a little bit about how he combines the composition with the performance. His music is played around the world, so it'll be great to have him. It's his first time visiting. For many of these artists, it's the first time visiting New Orleans, and for some, even the United States. Friday, May 19th, then at the Dixon Main Hall, we're going to have what we call the Guitar Jamboree, where we're going to have a mix of different genres and styles. We're going to have John Dobry with his group, that's jazz guitar, John Lawrence playing flamenco guitar with a group, a dancer and a percussionist, and then Don Vappi Trio that will be playing the banjo, performing Creole Cajun music. Then on Saturday, May 20th, is the only event that we don't have at Tulane. This will be at the U.S. Mint outdoors, and we call it Guitar Fiesta because it's more intended for people to come and dance and, of course, listen to.
It's a family-friendly event, and our artists that they're going to be, many of them, Jose Pepe Coloma from Peru and his group with Giovanni Santos from Brazil, Manuel Arteaga, Steve Masakowski with Los Tres Amigos, and then Javier with his band Achison. So it's going to be an afternoon filled with live music. And the best part of it is that it's free. So we invite everybody to come out from 11 a.m. to 6 p.m. at the U.S. Mint. Bring out your chairs, your blankets, and just have an afternoon of fun, music, and dancing.
Guitarist Javier Alondo and festival organizer Brenda Malara. It's been a pleasure talking with you.
Thank you, Diane.
Thank you,
likewise.
The week-long New Orleans International Guitar Festival, presented by the Cervantes Hispanic American Arts Foundation, kicks off tonight at Tulane University. It concludes Saturday at the U.S. Mint in the French Quarter with a day-long guitar fiesta. All events are free and open to the public. Are you still looking for more? I hear there is an after party with Julio and Cesar. Check the website, NewOrleansGuitarFestival.com. Across town, the Spider Queen, an original production of the NOLA Project, in partnership with the New Orleans Museum of Art, continues its run. The work is inspired by a piece in NOMA's Bestoff Sculpture Garden, where this new story unfolds. It's directed by Big Easy Award winner John Green, who is here with Assistant Director Ashley Rose Bailey. Welcome.
Thank you.
Hi, Diane.
This must be a very exciting time for you as your partnership with the New Orleans Museum of Art continues to strengthen. Is this your third original work in the garden?
I think it is.
It is the third, yeah. What's really neat about this one is that previously the original works were based on
Literature.
Yeah, in the public domains, you know, Robin Hood, Don Quixote. This is the first time the NOLA Project has ever done a completely original piece. James Bartel and Alex Martinez-Wallace, who wrote it, they had an idea, and from that idea, they just dreamed up this fantasy story. So it's referencing a lot of fantasy and pop culture, but it's a completely new, unique story never before told.
Which piece from the garden inspired this new work?
The Louis Bourgeois spider statue that sits in the oak grove. It's a beautiful, I want to say, easily 15 foot high, far-reaching piece. It's this magical spider, and it triggered all these ideas for James, and then he brought in Alex, and then it kind of ballooned from there. But the original moment of inception was that beautiful piece of art in the garden.
And how does this production complement the garden?
That's the great thing about this also being the first show in the garden that's done in the round. They've done shows that have changed location, but this is one where you're really sitting amongst the art and you can reference different statues. And we do at one point reference the spider to kind of like pay homage to the area where we get to do the show.
Mm-hmm. To build on that a little bit, outdoor work, work in the garden, harkens back to theater traditions that are hundreds of years old. And to get to do this kind of work in the garden is perfectly suited for the garden itself because it calls back to the original artwork. So we're building something so wonderfully old and artistic, surrounded by all these pieces built specifically to be outdoors.
And how are they challenging our imaginations? What's this about?
James and Alex really dug in deep to their own imaginations and their own love of fantasy, literature, and movies. And so this piece is a culmination of all those things that influenced them as they grew up. I started working with them as a director over a year ago when they began writing the script. And the conversations we would have in the process was, you know, think beyond the garden, build the world. You know, when you look at something like Lord of the Rings, that world is massive and built and the structures are there. And so James and Alex just had the ability to sort of leave Earth, leave the garden altogether, and just imagine as fantastical events as they could. And they really, really did.
So what's the storyline?
Well, there's two storylines. There's a storyline that takes place on Earth, and then there's a storyline that takes place in a parallel dimension. And those two storylines end up crossing. The storyline that takes place on Earth follows our protagonist, a 16-year-old young woman named Esma Mawgate. Her father is a park ranger, and she's out to clear his name after there was a terrible fire in the park, which is what brings her back to the park itself.
And then when she gets into the park with Ranger Clark, who is our other primary human character, they get pulled through a portal into the mystical realm of Gardendale, which is going through its own political upheavals because their monarch is dying, and there's like political intrigue over who's going to take control of the kingdom.
Mm-hmm. I want to just point out that great thing that Ashley Rose just said about our other primary human character. There are, I think, 17 or so characters in the play, and only two of them are human.
Uh-huh.
You know, 15 characters that are not human at
Ogres,
all.
Ogres, dragons, tree trolls.
Sorcerers.
Valkyries.
Archetypes that were made up just for this play. There's a character who's known as a Florizel, which is a flower-like humanoid. There's a character who's sort of the stoic old soldier. His name is Old Max Panthus. He is described in the script as a dog-like, cat-like humanoid. So really, just stretching the bounds of our imagination in every possible way.
This is quite a ride.
Oh, it is.
A magical ride, I hear.
Mm-hmm.
And the costumes?
The costumes are a combination between our costume designer, Hope Bennett, and our mask designer, Tony Fuemmeler. Tony works out of Portland, and he made 17 brand new masks in the Commedia style or tradition. Highly archetypal, not natural colors, really beautiful and strange, held on with a simple band. And then Hope complemented those with her own costumes to really build out this singular look.
And there are a lot of puppets in this production?
We have four puppets. The smallest one is 6 feet tall. Those were made by Kenneth Thompson, who works with K Studios. He actually was working in haunted houses, building these like very interesting traps and, you know, things that swoop down and go boo in the haunted house. And he returned home and he has just created these amazing, we have two ogre puppets that are about 8 feet tall and about 4 feet wide that our actors wear. And we have our Adoxus bird, which is 6 feet tall, operated by two actors. And then we have our Spider Queen.
Mm-hmm. Which has a 30-foot leg span from side to side and requires about 8 actors to bring it to life.
Wow.
Yeah.
Is it true that this production has a uniquely New Orleans feel to it?
It's not that this play is for New Orleans, but rather that I think New Orleanians will come to this play and understand why it's happening in New Orleans. As a culture that embraces so much grandeur and spectacle in our carnival season, as a culture that embraces sights and sounds on every street corner, to come to the Garden and not just see a play, but see a massive fantasy spectacle, that feels right here.
The NOLA Project's John Green and Ashley Rose Bailey, thanks.
Thank you.
Thank you, Diane.
The NOLA Project presents The Spider Queen, with an original score by Glenn Elquin, in partnership with the New Orleans Museum of Art. Performances run through May 28th in NOMA's Best of Sculpture Garden. More info at nolaproject.com. You're listening to Inside the Arts on 89.9 WWNO, New Orleans Public Radio. I'm Diane Mack. The fourth annual Wetlands Art Tour continues tomorrow night on the West Bank with a unique event at a studio in the woods on the lower Algiers coast. Antenna presents Signals, a variety show featuring a host of artist presentations with a theme of loss and found as it pertains to the wetlands. Antenna Executive Director Bob Sneed joins us. Welcome to Inside the Arts.
Thank you so much, Diane.
This sounds like a fun learning experience. Let's first start with your organization, Antenna. What is it?
Antenna is a 12-year-old organization based in the Bywater. We do artist and writer projects throughout the city. We also give artists grants and provide funding and support for artist and writer projects throughout the city.
Now, this event, Signals, is in conjunction with the fourth annual Wetlands Art Tour. Tell us, what makes the offerings unique?
We started this series as a way to connect different disciplines across the city. For this cycle, we were really inspired by the Wetlands Art Tour put together by John Calhoun of Spotlight. His issues are the wetlands and the loss of the wetlands and how we're losing land so rapidly on the coast. But we also wanted to focus on those things that are found in those moments of loss. So we put together this amazing group of artists, writers, thinkers, scientists, all based on that theme.
What will audiences experience?
We have Cry You One, the great performance that was put together originally in 2013 with Art Spot Productions and Mondo Bizarro. They're going to do a 30-minute performance and kind of be the live music of the evening. We have Brandon Ballinger, who is a wetlands scientist and artist. He's going to present on some of his photography. We have John Taylor, who basically lives in Bayou Bienvenue and is going to talk about the rebirth of the ghost swamp there. Because of the Mr. Go Canal being cut into the lower nine, it was this area that was a really lush environment and has since had a lot of saltwater intrusion and created what people refer to as the ghost swamp. So it's all of these sort of toothpick trees along the levee there that have been basically killed because of the saltwater coming in. And John has seen how the swamp is kind of reforming and changing despite that destruction. Joseph Makos, who discovered the Times-Picayune archive from 1880 to 1930 on Craigslist, he's going to talk about that discovery and then also how those papers kind of reveal our trajectory and relationship of geography and ecology. We have Michelle Verisco, who is going to talk about how her work has kind of transformed and focused on nature. She's been photographing wetlands and the environments, particularly in recent times with the BP oil spill, and also a lot of the loss that's happening rapidly along the coast. She's creating these beautiful installations and environments that are really focusing on a lot of these issues along the coast. We have Rashida Ferdinand from Sankofa, and she's going to talk about the Wetlands Park that they're working on. And then we're also launching this new program called Letters Read. We discovered in working with Studio in the Woods that Lucianne Carmichael, who recently passed away, had written this beautiful letter in 1985 to sculptor Lynn Emery when she had commissioned a sculpture on the compound there. It's all about the power of art and how artists can transform emotion. We're launching this new series that's called Letters Read, and it's in collaboration with Nancy Sharon Collins, who's a station here in town. She's collecting all of these historic letters about the city from really important historical people in the city. And we thought it would be a really amazing thing to launch this program at Signals, reading Lucianne's letter to Lynn Emery.
This is going to be an entertaining and informing event. In what ways will visitors learn about things they can do to help make a difference on the coast?
We really want people to come away from the event with a greater understanding of how much land is being lost around the city, not necessarily in the city itself, but around us and not that far from us. We have so much land being lost, and we want people to walk away from this event understanding that and really wanting to get involved in some way. So whether that is going and assisting John at Bayou Bienvenue or helping people at Studio in the Woods, we would love that. We are at a precipice in terms of the wetlands. There are so many people in different disciplines really addressing this issue at so many different angles. It's not just artists or scientists or writers. Everyone is really concerned about this.
Antenna Executive Director Bob Sneed, thanks for stopping by.
Thank you.
Antenna presents Signals, Loss and Found, in conjunction with the 4th Annual Wetlands Art Tour at a studio in the woods, 13401 Patterson Road on the West Bank. Tomorrow night from 6:30 until 9. More info at antenna.works. That's our show for this week. Support for Inside the Arts comes from the Hellas Foundation. Our program is a production of WWNO and is archived at WWNO.org. I'll be back with more ideas for your artistic palette next Tuesday at 1 p.m. when we'll go Inside the Arts. I'm Diane Mack.